Hello and welcome to the After Dinner Podcast. My name is Jay Swords. This is the podcast extension for ROI Show 557. Our guest today is Kelly Rundle, documentary filmmaker. We're going to be talking about his film series, Lost Nation, The Iowa. Our history buffs are Terry Toppler and Ed Broders. Ed, start us off.
Can you tell us a little bit about the film itself? How long did it take to make it? And I am curious as to decided to make a movie about the Iowa. You looked for information, and how did you find it in the Milwaukee Public Museum?
That's a great question, and I don't remember how we learned that that's where these materials were and are. I wish I did. But the film, we began shooting the film in 2005, and Tammy and I lived in Los Angeles for about 18 years, and so we were living in L.A. when we shot the film, and then we moved here to the Quad Cities, which is back home for me, in 2007. And the first order of business was to edit and complete Lost Nation, The Iowa, which we thought would just be one film. And we premiered that film at the State Historical Building in Des Moines. And for the first time, we had a large number of Iowa people back in the state of Iowa. So we had dreamt that maybe 100 people would come. And on the night of the premiere, we realized that there were more like 200 members of the Iowa Tribe of Kansas and Nebraska and the Iowa Tribe of Oklahoma. So that's the largest gathering of Iowa people back in the state since they were removed. We then went on a series of showings of the film that followed that, and the phone just kept ringing. And that was great news because, of course, we were eager to share the film and the story with people. But one of the questions that people asked, because the film focuses on this period between, let's say, 1600 and the 1830s with some footnotes, well, what happened after that? And so we did at some point decide to have a meeting with the tribes to see if they would support the notion of making an additional two films that would kind of complete the story then from early 1600 to the 1970s. And they were eager to do that. I think what we've described it as passive support with the first film and active support with the second two films. Lots of individuals helped us out the first time around, though, who saw the value of the work. So that was those two films were premiered at the University of Iowa in Iowa City in 2013. And the day after, we went with a group of what they call the Southern Iowa, so those are the Iowa Tribe of Oklahoma folks. We went out to the village site near Eldon, Iowaville, which was just an amazing experience for us, and I know that the Native folks appreciated it as well. So that's a little bit about the films.
Okay. Terry?
I wanted to watch the film.
Oh, no, go ahead, Ed.
Can we watch these films?
We of course sell the films on DVD, but they're also available to stream on Vimeo, Vimeo.com. Most of our films, if not all of them, are on there to stream.
All right. Terry, do you have a question?
I do, yes. Kelly, talk to us about the title. Of course, you know, when we choose a title for our film, yep, it has to be incredibly significant. So why did you choose the title Lost Nation?
Yeah, it should be very significant. And also, I guess what you're trying to do is to intrigue your potential audience. And so I knew, I had a friend, a childhood friend who grew up in the town of Lost Nation, Iowa. And so mm-hmm. I had that name in my head all those many years. But we were, the film, I guess that one of the themes of the film has to do with loss. And for Native people, it has to do with the loss of their land. It has to do with the loss of their culture, with the loss of language. These are all themes that we explored in the three films. And so with that first film, it was meant to be intriguing. But, of course, we did want to include the name of the group in there so that that would sort of point specifically to the topic. But I would say that it was a little bit controversial with some of our Iowa friends because they would say it the wrong way, for one thing. If you add a the, at the beginning, it changes the the meaning. And I think it was perhaps most concerning to people who hadn't seen the films also, who hadn't actually watched them. But that's something that if we were to do it over, maybe we would choose something slightly different. Maybe.
Sort of along some lines that you brought up there, working with native populations is always a bit of a tricky business when you're talking about culture and things like that, because there is both historical information that's going on. There's also the cultural meanings in the moment. And sometimes those two things can conflict with each other. I'm thinking in particular of dealing with religious ceremonies and things like that, where you want to talk about what that historical religious, in those institutions were and what those beliefs were and whatever. And yet at the same time, there may be a group of folks who are still actively practicing a religion which is seen as secretive is the wrong word, as self-contained. You know, this is my religion. It's not a religion I share. Mm-hmm. And so how did you navigate all of that? Because I know you talked about there were some things you just didn't ask to see. There was no reason to do that. And, you know, why create that extra? How did you navigate that? And I'm not thinking just in terms of what you filmed, but I'm also thinking in terms of the people that you dealt with.
Yeah. So Tammy and I, you know, started off at zero on the subject in terms of our own knowledge of it. And all of that changed, of course, once we began talking with members of the two tribes. And then I would say we had people who were very, we were naive, I think, and didn't know what we were doing. So I think that we had some Iowa elders who saw that, but felt that we had good hearts, and they helped us. And they helped us navigate those things that you're talking about. And other times, I guess if we did the wrong thing, people were more forgiving and accommodating because they understood we didn't know. We know a lot more now, but we did start from zero. So I think without having the support of those elders that really, some reached out to us, some were just helpful once we asked, and we can't repay that, you know, debt in a way. I hope we did by help, you know, telling and preserving just a part of their story. But other than that, it is like any kind of intercultural interaction, in that if everybody's being respectful and open to learning, then you know, it turns out to be a good thing.
Well, and I was thinking you used the word pay back. I don't know that you could ever pay back those elders, but I'm wondering if you're being asked in a way to pay back their willingness to help you by having other people come to you and say, hey, we're thinking about doing something dealing with Native culture or whatever. How can I learn from you? Because it has to be a fairly small community of folks who do know how to go about the process and have learned what's going on. And I would think if I were a filmmaker and I were where you guys started, the first thing I would want to do is talk to you and say, okay, how do I do this? How do I do this in a way that's respectful, that will garner that encouragement and that, you know, sort of benefit of the doubt that you guys had? Has anybody done that yet? Are you suddenly becoming experts in how to do Native documentaries?
No, but I would say that there just aren't too many people that are aware of the Iowa story. So we do get some inquiries about that, and then can funnel those inquiries to the tribes or whoever might be the right person to talk to. You know, we get to, with all of our projects, we get to hang out with a lot of people who are way smarter than we are. And when we put a film together, it makes it look like we're smart, you know. But we're creative people, and we're trying to, in the same way that a college professor is going to try to put together a lecture that's effective storytelling in the classroom. That's what we do, but we do it with cinema. And so we do. There probably would be some advice we can offer to people, and people have asked. It's just not a common. It's not common. But we love to field inquiries about the Iowa, because any chance we have to talk about them and their story is a chance we want to take advantage of.
Well, and I would sure hope that it became more common, that there were more people, you know, because it's what we need. We need more people to be involved and showing different points of view and so forth and so on. So maybe it'll get more common as we go by.
Sure.
Terry, I'm going to let you take the last question.
Okay, thank you. So I'd like to know about the people today. I understand that being Indian is not just cultural, but also a legal status. How many Iowas are on the rolls today, and how do you prove your ancestry?
Right. So I can give you some numbers which are just round figures. So for the Iowa Tribe of Kansas and Nebraska, let's say 3,500 tribal members. For the Iowa Tribe of Oklahoma, I don't know, let's say 900. These are just approximate figures because I haven't seen anything recently. Tribes decide how you can be or not be a member. So with the Northern Tribe, you are a member if your parent or grandparent was a member. And with other tribes, it can be what's called blood quantum. And the difficulty with that approach for the tribes is just that you could have, for example, in Oklahoma, you could have children who are full-blooded Native American children, but because they don't have quite enough of heritage of one or another, they might actually not be able to, you know, have tribal membership. So it's really, it really is a difficult question, and one that the tribes, struggle with too, as they look into the future, and what membership means and what it is. But fortunately, they do get to decide what that is. So it's self-determining that way. But blood quantum has been used in a negative sense, in a negative way, over the years.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of where I first ran into that was where casinos and so forth had become involved, and so you were trying to determine who would receive the benefits from that, and it, in some cases, from what I've read, got pretty ugly in turn, because you were splitting hairs in really weird ways and so forth. So yeah, probably anytime money becomes involved, it becomes more problematic.
Yeah, both of the tribes have casinos and they have other businesses. They're kind of diversified in terms of business these days, and they have farming operations and other kinds of things. So they're going concerns and they're doing well. I mentioned when we were off mic that the Iowa have land in the state of Iowa for the first time since removal. There was a couple in Johnson County, Iowa, who donated a parcel of land to the Iowa Tribe of Kansas and Nebraska. And we were out there not too long ago for a kind of a ceremony revolved around that acquisition. And it's very exciting news and very meaningful to the Iowa, because now there is actually a physical place where they can meet, where they can be, where they can do ceremonies, and it's in their original homelands.
We would like to thank our guests for this 557th show, Kelly Rundle, documentary filmmaker. We've been talking about his film series, Lost Nation, The Iowa. The history buffs for today's show were Terry Toppler and Ed Broders. ROI can be found at 9:30 p.m. Friday nights on KALA Radio or on the web at tunein.com. If you're looking for older programs, you'll find them at soundcloud.com. Just put KALA Radio, all one word, in the search, click on the first icon, and scroll down to find over a decade of ROI shows. You can also find ROI on all of your favorite streaming platforms. ROI is recorded at Station KALA, St. Ambrose University.